All right, at this time, I'm going to ask Richie C. to come up and introduce Jimmy T. Hey, family. I'm an addict named Richie. I'm here by God's grace and God's mercy. And I get the pleasure and the honor to introduce our Friday night speaker, someone that came into my life. I don't even know what year it was, but it's been a long time. And I had the honor and the pleasure to sponsor him. He's a very dedicated, obedient soldier to our Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. He's a great father, good family man, excellent husband, and a good man of God. And he's very, very close in my life. I love him dearly, and I'm sure you're going to love him even more than I do after you hear him. Let's give a warm welcome, Oklahoma, to Jimmy T. from New Jersey. I'm Jimmy, I'm a recovering addict. Cleaned by God's grace and mercy, sponsorship, the 12 steps, 12 editions of Narcotics Anonymous. And can we give the Oklahoma region and the convention committee a round of applause for 39 years? And I want to thank Doug for the phone call and the patience. I am not a compulsive, impulsive guy like I used to be. I would get the phone call. I wouldn't even look to see if there was something happening with my wife and daughters that weekend, or maybe I was supposed to work. The answer was yes. I'm coming. And in hindsight, I understand that I needed to be needed. I needed to be heard. I needed to be seen. I needed to be loved. Now, I needed all those things, but I didn't want you to give me all of those things. I know I'm probably the only one in here that wanted and needed love, but the moment that you loved me, I didn't want you to love me anymore. Like, love me, but don't be, like, close to me, and don't really, like, want to talk to me, and don't, like, ask me any questions. Just love me. All right, I see some identification, so I know I'm in the right place. So it took me a while before I was able to get back to Doug, a while, like over a month before I was able to really respond to Doug and say, I would be honored to come. Because I had to talk to my daughters. Now, understand this, my daughter's 31, married with a baby. My other daughter's 25, right? They live on their own. I have a wife that I've been with for over 44 years. And, you know, so there was some stuff. Like, one of the things that the 12 steps have done for me is it's reduced the residual of the self-obsession inside of me. I didn't say it's gone. It's reduced it. So I'm not my immediate first thought isn't always me, I, Oklahoma, absolutely, I'm in. It has become, is me getting on a plane and going someplace different going to be hurtful to my wife and daughters, even if they tell me to go? Because I used to always ask my wife, do you care? And she'd be like, no. You know, I made my first meeting. I just give you guys a little bit of background. Some people in here know me, some don't. I made my first meeting in like April 14th, 1985. Right? So over 40 years ago, I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. I don't have 40 years clean. I'm in the window of the 30s or 40s, but I don't have 40 years clean. But I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, and I wasn't interested in getting clean. I was 19 years old. I didn't really think I had a problem. And my job thought I had a problem. My fiance thought I had a problem. My mom and dad thought I had a problem. The police department in New Jersey and New York thought I had a problem. You know, my employer thought I had a problem. The union thought I had a problem. You know, everybody thought I had a problem. I was 19 years old. And if you got clean back at that time, you know that 98, maybe 99, maybe 105% of the people in Narcotics Anonymous were heroin addicts. And they all talked about shooting dope for 20 years and abscesses, and I was like, yeah, you need to be here. Look at you. I was 19, I had a full head of hair. I had my own teeth. These are purchased. I had my own teeth. I had a career. I was an apprentice in a union. I was making really good money. So what if I couldn't, like, cash my paycheck on Wednesday and get to work Thursday, Friday, Monday, and Tuesday? So what if I left the house and nobody knew where I was for 6-7 days at a time? So that was really nobody's business. And I really believed that wholeheartedly. So when I made meetings, I just wasn't interested in getting clean. I didn't want to lose my I'm just going to call her my wife for simplicity. I didn't want to lose my wife. I didn't want to lose my job. I didn't want to lose anything that I had, but I wasn't willing to give up what was causing me to lose my job and my wife and everything else, because I had so much fear and insecurity ravaging inside of me that it was easier for me to subdue that stuff by using and getting high than it was to have to deal with it, because I had never dealt with it before. Right? At 19, I was already gone. I needed help. I needed help at 11, to be honest with you. At 11 years old, I was drinking, like, you know, date myself. You know, the little, like, 6-ounce glasses filled with scotch, like, just during the day, randomly. My parents would be out. He had a big bottle in the back on the swivel. And I would swivel it, and I would drink it, and next thing you know, I could talk to the girls out front, and my inhibitions were gone, and I felt okay, and I didn't care that my hair was parted to the side, and my mom had me in a bow tie with a button-down shirt. I didn't care that I was wearing corduroy jeans that swished when I walked. I didn't care that I was Urkel before Urkel. I was a bookworm. Listen, my pants were short. I was a bookworm. I was the teacher's pet. But I was, when that show Family Matters came out, and Urkel and his public awkwardness and his people, I was like, oh, I should be getting some money off of this. That's my story. That was me. And I was socially awkward, and I didn't fit in. But all of a sudden, when I put a substance in my body, now I fit in. It didn't matter how you looked at me, if you liked me, if you cared. It didn't really matter. And in the meantime of all of this, I'm this athlete. I'm just going to say it as it is. I was an extremely gifted baseball player. I was playing with kids that were bigger than me and older than me, and playing on varsity baseball as a freshman in high school. I was all state for 4 years and all county, and I was the batting third and playing short, and we were the best team in New Jersey. And you couldn't tell me that my drinking was an issue, because there was no proof of it. And I found myself some years later in Narcotics Anonymous, not wanting to get clean, not willing to surrender. So I bounced from 1985 until April 30th of 1992. And I went on a run. I want the newcomer to be able to identify. I want you to think I came up here and, you know, I have spiritual principles and I'm better now, and, you know, because I'm definitely don't look like what I've been through, even clean. And I went on this run in Newark, New Jersey, and it was like a 7-month run. I weighed 108 pounds. I'm 190 right now. So imagine me like 90 pounds less than I am. My eyes were sunk in the back of my head. I was drinking out of a cup that I had been spitting in for 6 months. I hadn't eaten, showered, or changed in 6 months. So, you know, remember the story I started with? At 19, you guys needed to be here because you were a mess. Well, at 26, I needed to be here. And I came home. They put me out of the crack house. I still had dope and money on me, and they didn't beat me. When they throw you out of the crack house and they don't take your dope and your money and you weigh 108 pounds, you might have to take a look at your drug use. I can remember the girl running the place. She said, "You're tweaking behind, gotta go. You're messing up, I'll get high." And I left. I don't know what happened. I left. I showed up at the apartment that my wife owned. My wife was paying for. I can't say our apartment. It wasn't our name, but I wasn't paying anything. And my wife proceeded to tell me that she was going to separate the apartment. She was going to get the inside and I was going to get the outside. She told me that she hated me. She told me I was a junkie. And she had said it before. And it was like water off my back. But this time it was not. I felt what she said to me in my heart and in my spirit. And I wanted to die. And I made a couple phone calls. I got an interview for a facility. I went there on Thursday, May 1st, my clean date, May 1st, 1992. So if I can stay out of God's way for 13 days, I'll celebrate 33 years clean. I went to this interview, and the director of the facility interviewed me, and he said, "Give me 5 good things about yourself." I said, "I'm breathing, I'm alive, I'm not sure either one of them are good. And there is nothing else good about me." And he said, "If you can stay clean until Monday, you have a bed here." That was 4 days. I told you she's separated the house. What was I going to do for 4 days? And my wife, in her graciousness and her utter love for me, all these years later, unfounded love for me, unfounded dedication for me, she said, "You could stay at the house, on the couch." On the couch. No, you're not coming in the bedroom. No, you're not touching me. No, we're not going to have sex before you go away. On the couch. No, I'm not cooking for you. I mean, she just put up the wall, finally. And I spent 4 days. I went to a couple meetings. Monday morning, she dropped me off. And I remember it was Wednesday, the first group. And it was, you know, it's a co-ed facility now, but back then it was just a men's facility. And I remember in the group, and, you know, everybody was interested. Like, who was the redhead that dropped you off? I said, "The redhead?" I said, "My wife dropped me off." They said, "Yeah, the redhead." I said, "No, my wife's a blonde." They said, no, "A redhead dropped you off." I said, "You guys are highly mistaken. Who's a blonde that dropped me off?" So I argued with them. 2 weeks into me being there, they brought my wife in to have a family meeting, and lo and behold, a redhead walked in. I was in the house with her for 4 days clean and didn't recognize that she had dyed her hair. I had no health insurance. I hadn't worked. You don't work in the union, you don't have health insurance. My wife paid the $1,500 a month for 3 months for me to be there. She never told my family. She never told her family. She told my family. She never told her family. She ate hot dogs and macaroni and cheese. And she went to work every day right around the corner from where her parents lived and never told them. She just kept telling him, "Oh, he's at a speaker jam. Oh, he's at a convention. Oh, I was everywhere but in treatment." So when my sponsor says that I'm a dedicated husband, I'm an indebted husband. I'm indebted to my wife. I'm indebted to the only person that stood up for me at the end. Because I remember when she told me to get out, I called my father. My father was a cop at the time. And he said, about time. And if you come on my block, I'm going to shoot you. That's where the disease of addiction took me. So now that the newcomers know that I come from the same dark, desolate place you come from, I'm going to start telling you about what Narcotics Anonymous has done for my life. I'm going to start telling you what the 12 steps, the transformation power of the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous and building a relationship with the God that I believe in. I didn't say the God of my understanding because I don't understand God. I just don't. I don't even try to understand God anymore. I've kind of surrendered. And the deeper I get into the literature and the deeper I get into the 12 steps, the more I understand I'm not supposed to understand, because the moment I understand, I'm going to try to fix it, and everything I fix ends up worse. So the 12 steps have completely transformed my life. I went from this selfish, indignant, self-righteous, insecure, insignificant, filled with self-hatred and self-loathing individual to an addict who, secure in the love of the fellowship, can look another human being in the eye. No shame, no guilt. I'm unapologetic for what Narcotics Anonymous has done in my life. I would always struggle for years with talking about the good things in my life because I always felt like people would think I was bragging. But through sponsorship and step work, I've started to realize that I am bragging. I'm bragging about the power of Narcotics Anonymous, the power of surrender to sponsorship, the power of surrender to the 12-step process, the power of surrender to a God that I believe in, and the grace and the mercy of that God that I believe in that has walked me through storm after storm after storm after storm clean, that I've come out and been able to, how about this, take my experience and help somebody else. Narcotics Anonymous is so profoundly manipulative that we don't even know it. Think about it. 12 Step says, you're going to keep what you have, let's give it away. Well, I just buried my sister. Give it away. What are you talking about? Give it away. You're going to walk into a meeting, somebody's going to lose a loved one. You're going to be the one that's going to walk them through it. Oh, so I didn't lose. So there's a bag outside. The broader has got a bag outside. And on that bag it says, God didn't do it to you, he did it for you. Now, I'm not saying that God took my sisters that died. What I'm saying is that God took my sisters that died and flipped that into his grace in my life and allowing me to get through it clean with dignity and self-respect, so that when somebody comes behind me, I can help them get through it with dignity and self-respect. See, it's never about me. It's never been about me. It'll never be about me. And the more I think it's about me, the more I miss the mark. So I get clean. I'm in this treatment facility. I'm going to, undress a little bit. Dee said to me before, I said, you can hang me in here. She said, it'll be better later. As you can tell, I still have a little issues with trust. Maybe you guys are good. I'm not always good. So at 33 days clean, I'm going home for my first visit with my wife. And yeah, I'm going to this meeting I've been going to for years. And I walk into the meeting and I have a reservation I'm going to use. I'm going home for a weekend visit. I'm going to use this weekend. I got money put aside. Plan is done. I'm going to get home Friday night, spend Saturday morning, and then I'm going to a meeting with Tim. And then after the meeting in the morning with Tim, we're going to go to breakfast. And then I'm not even going to come home, babe. I'm just going to go. Tim and I are going to go to the afternoon meeting, too. And then, we're going to go to lunch. And then I'll come home, babe, for a couple hours. And then I'm going to go out with Doug to the night meeting. And then we're probably going to go to the diner after that. And then I'll be home Saturday night, probably like 1 in the morning. Now, I haven't seen my wife in 9 months, right? She's letting me back in the house for a visit. And I'm already thriving to want to use because I have no humility and I'm embarrassed that I want to use, and I don't want to tell anybody that I want to use, but I want to use really bad that I can taste it, and I've already made the plan to go use, but I don't have enough courage to say I want to use, so I make up this big plan in my head before I go home for the visit. And on Sunday, babe, I have to be back at the facility for 1, so in the morning I'm going to go to the 7 a.m. meeting, and then I'm going to go from there, and then I'm going to go to eat, and then they're going to drop me off. I'll deal with the repercussions on Monday when they urine me. It's not a big deal. But I go to this meeting on Friday night in the bus. And I walk into this meeting, and I know everybody in the meeting. I've been around for 7 years. And everybody's trying to hug me, and I'm giving them the, way long before COVID ever came, I'm giving them the, give me six. Nah, I don't feel like hugging tonight. I really don't feel like hugging tonight. So they all go, and they sit up. I got my back on the wall, and I'm just listening to the meeting. A good friend of mine, he's doing the seventh step, and he shares on the seventh step, and I see this guy in the front of the meeting, and he looks awfully familiar to me. He looks like this guy that came into treatment in 87 with his raccoon hat and his sheepskin coat with his Lee jeans with the sewn-in seam and his shell-top Adidas, and he dipped. And he looked like Daryl Mack from Run DMC. That's who he looked like. And he was cool like that. But now I see him, and he looks different. He's wearing a blue sweatshirt, blue Lee jeans, a pair of brown Tims. Yeah, I remember like it was yesterday because it was probably potentially the most important day of my life. And the speaker shares on the seventh step, and this guy raises his hand. And I can use his name because he went home and he went home clean. He said, my name is Andre, I'm a recovering addict, and thank you for sharing on the seventh step, and I'm struggling with multiple relationships, but I know through God's sponsorship and the seventh step that I don't have to live like that anymore. And I'm in the back, I want to get high, I got 33 days clean. He's got like 6 years clean. He's glowing, there's a glow. You ever walk in a meeting, you see somebody glowing? There's like a glow about them. You're attracted to them. You don't know why you're attracted to them. You're kind of like, ooh, that's kind of weird, but I'm attracted to them. Oh, I want to go hug that guy, but I don't really know. He had that. He had that presence about him. But as he's sharing humbly about wanting to get better, I'm judging him. And I want to get high, and I can't tell nobody I want to get high. I don't know if the newcomer's hearing the self-centeredness and the self-obsession of the disease of addiction. I want to get high. So while he's sharing, I'm calling him a punk. Oh, no real man shares like that. Real man, man's up. You tell your boys about that. You don't tell nobody no meeting about, you want to get better with that. Are you crazy? In the meantime, I'm committed to my wife, the disease. The meeting ends. There's 8 of us in the meeting. We're circled up. And he's right in front of me. And we do the serenity prayer. So I do the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the fact that he's a punk. Wisdom to know he's a punk. Right? Serenity prayer ends, and I have no idea, but I'm nose to nose with him. Well, nose to chest. He was much taller than me. And he's like, Jimmy, how are you? I'm like, I'm good, Andre. He goes, what's up? I'm like, he said, what happened? I said, like 4 times I do it. And after the 4th time, he says to me, hey, listen, man, I'd really like to be able to help you, but I need to hear what you need, man. I'm not sure what you're saying. And as I start to say it the 5th time, and I start to drop my head, and I'm sobbing, he puts the back of his hand underneath my chin, and he lifts my chin up. And when I make eye contact with him, his eyes are filled. And he says, what do you need? And I said, I'm gonna die. I need help. I'm gonna die. And as I'm saying this, he pulls me in and he holds me. And he says to me the most profound thing. He says, it would be honor if you would let me in your life. And he held me, it seemed like forever. It was uncomfortable. I told you, I wanted you to love me, but... And he's holding me. And he's coddling me, and I needed to be coddled. And I needed to be loved through my anger and my resentments and my self-hatred. I just needed to be loved. And when he finally let me go, he said, okay, I need a commitment. I said, okay. He said, I need a promise that you're going to work through the 12 steps with me. Because that's what sponsorship is, Jimmy. This ain't about friendship. This ain't about us being boys. Now, all of a sudden, he was all loving and care. Now he's like, but I needed him to talk to me the way he spoke to me. And I remember I immediately went into NA defense. Because I knew these books, well, the basic text. Bless you. We didn't have It Works How and Why then. We only had the basic text just for today, just came out. So we didn't have the... And I knew the book. I said, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Can we do Who's an Addict? He says, if you don't know who an addict is now, going over that chapter is not going to cut it. What is the NA program? He goes, you can recite it. Why are we here? We know why we're here. What are we going to do? And he took me to page 19, where it says that the steps are the antidote to the disease of addiction. They're the principles that make our recovery possible. He said, if you're going to recover, you need to work the steps. He said, and listen to me. I'm telling you, Jimmy, you don't have the benefit that a lot of people in NA have. A lot of people come to NA and they never work steps and they never change. They just don't put substances in their body and they remain miserable and trapped, like the literature says, and they constantly battle over and over and over and over again and find no joy and peace. Jimmy, you don't have that privilege. You need more. So I submitted, and I said, okay. And he went to the car, he came back, and he gave me this worksheet. 13 questions. I go home. You know, again, I'm already arrogant. I'm arrogant already. I'm like, what is answering 13 questions going to help me stay clean? How's that possibly going to work? No, I don't understand. Now, I'm already telling him how to sponsor me. I know there's a lot of identification in here. Trying to tell help how to help you. So he says to me, Jimmy, just answer the questions and we'll go over them and you'll see the magic of Narcotics Anonymous come to life in your life. And I let my guard down. I went back to the facility and I answered all 13 questions. I left him at 8:30. At 10:30, I called him. He said, hello. I said, Andre. He said, bro, there's no way something's wrong already. I said, no, I'm done. He said, with what? I said, with my first step. He said, that's impossible. I said, it's not. He goes, read your first answer. Read it. Read your second answer. Read it. Read your third answer. Read it. He goes, you wrote that out. I go, yes. Yes, I don't want to die.
Who wrote?
I don't want to die, Andre. I'm going to die. I know I'm going to die. I know there's no way I'm going to stay clean. I don't know what else to do, and I trust you. I need this. I need to do this. He said, great. That's wonderful. What time are you going to be home tomorrow? I said, what do you need that information for? He said, didn't you tell me you're going home to see your wife in the morning? I said, I am. He goes, well, what time will you be there? I said, bro, guide through the 12 steps. Not worrying about where I am. He said, Jimmy, what time? Andre, I'm not telling you, 8:45, what time I'm going to be home. Since even in my fight, there was a surrender. What's your address? Now you're going way too far. I'm not giving you my address. I don't even know you like that. What's your address, Jimmy? Andre, I'm not giving you my address. I'm not sure I'm going to give you my address. Jimmy, what's your address? Andre, you're not getting it. 21 Dino Drive, Keysby, New Jersey. Okay. Get a good night's sleep, and when you get home in the morning, make sure you hug your wife and give her a kiss and thank her. Okay. I get home at 8:45. I'm hugging my wife. The doorbell rings at 9 o'clock. I'm probably 112 pounds now.
Uh-oh.
And anybody that knows me, and my sponsor Richie knows me, when I came to NA, I was like this. Saggy pants, bumping DMX, and Tupac, and Biggie, Dr. Dre. I was just thugged out. It's just, that's where I grew up, it's where I came from, that's what I loved. So all of a sudden, I'm hugging her, thanking her, and then I'm like, who's at the door? She's like, I don't know. Oh, you don't know? Oh, you don't know. You've been home 4 weeks by yourself. Saturday morning, 9 o'clock. Doorbell rings. You don't know? She said, babe, I have no idea who could be at the door. Well, how would I know who could be at the door? I haven't been here. Well, I'm telling them, I haven't been here in 9 months. I don't understand. Who could possibly... She said, well, go find out. I get to the door. I open the door. There's Andre. 3 cups of coffee and his basic tax under his arm. What are you doing here? He goes, bro, you said your first step was done. What has that got to do with you being here? He said, Jimmy, we got to strike when the iron's hot. You may have an amnesia tomorrow. We got to get your step done. I'm like, bro, you're not, no. I'm arguing with him. Here comes my wife. She looks over my shoulder. She's like, hey, Andre. He's like, hi, Lori, how are you? She's like, I'm good. She's like, what's going on? He's like, Jimmy asked me to help him last night. He finished his first step. I want to go over his first step. She's like, get out of the way and let him in. This one, I got to deal with her now. Andre comes in. He puts the coffee in his basic text down and he hugs my wife. And I see my wife break. And I hear him say to her, it's good. It's over. It's done. He's ready. He's going to stay clean. But we got to do step work, Lord. Help him. Help him to stay hungry. Encourage him. Support him. Just love him. He's going to be crazy, but love him. Very direct, very honest. We sat down with all my first step, and the recovery process started in that moment. And he loved me like I had never been loved before. They said, get in his back pocket. I used to drive 45 minutes south, pick him up, drive 45 minutes back to my house, and then 45 minutes north. So I could get like 3.5 hours with him every day. I wanted what he had. I really, really wanted what he had. And he gave it all to me. All of it. I remember I had about 18 months clean. We had been through the 12 steps. Everybody had an issue with me being through the 12 steps at 18 months clean. He said, who was with you when you were smoked out? Any of them? I said, no. Every time you get locked up, were any of them with you? I was like, no. He said, then leave them where they are. Keep working. Keep grinding. Keep getting better, Jimmy. I need you to get better. I want you to recover from the disease of addiction. I don't want you to just stay clean, Jimmy. I want you to become the man God intended you to be. He started to speak life back into me. And at 18 months clean, I was on his couch in the living room. And I just broke down. I said, I don't understand why you love me. And I don't understand why you put up with me. And I don't understand. I was on the pity pot. I was feeling sorry for myself or something. Who knows what. Probably broke a fingernail or something. And life was over. I was never going to get through the day or whatever. And he looked at me and he said, my job is to give you everything I have so when I need it, I can come back and get it. So he taught me about sponsorship being a two-way street. And we ground through the 12 steps over and over and over again. I had a little girl in September of 1993, Ashley Marie. By the time she was a year old, 18 months old, she was in the hospital in a bubble. She was never coming home. Today she owns her own dance school. Today she no longer battles with asthma. Today she's married, has a little girl of her own. He walked me through that stuff. A couple years later, he decided he was leaving Narcotics Anonymous. I was holding on. I was like, I don't care if you never go back to another meeting. I'm not getting another sponsor. I'm never going to do it. So like 18, 19 months, he really wasn't making meetings. He was answering the phone, but he was trying to talk to me about stuff outside of Narcotics Anonymous. And I already had guidance with that stuff. I didn't need that stuff. I needed a sponsor in NA, and I wouldn't let go. And I get invited to, go do a sponsorship workshop in Long Island. And I walk into the convention in Long Island. I'm going to speak. I'm going to pontificate on my knowledge and vast experience in sponsorship, even though I don't have one for 18 months. And I walk in, and there's a group of people that I know, Brian B, Big Mike, and there's this guy, Richie, who's there. He's this Italian guy, and he's got like a rough reputation. Very, yeah, people are like, yeah. He's got this rough reputation, and he's very direct, and I'm not, like, really good at very direct. That's not me. I still, at 59 years old, with 32 plus years clean, sometimes I just still need you to just rub my back and tell me I'm going to be okay, like the four-year-old. I just know who I am. I'm not the guy who's like, oh, I'm a manly man. Nah, I am a manly man, and I show my emotions and my feelings, and when I need help, I need help, and I ask for help. I'm no longer too proud to ask for help, right? So I walk in and he's like, what's up? I'm like, you know, right away, I'm like, what's up? I got 8 years clean now. My hat's no longer here. My hat's probably here now. My pants are a little bit better fitting. They're not hanging down to the floor. My clothes aren't as big as they used to be. I'm not always listening to DMX. I'm listening to some other kind of music now, and life is shifting. But the moment that I feel threatened, I'm like, what's up? He's like, what's going on, man? And I don't know what happened inside me. I do. It was a move of God. I puked on him. Not literally. I said, I don't know. Andre's leaving NA. And he's like, did you get another sponsor? I'm like, I'm not getting another sponsor. He's like, boy, you got to have a sponsor that goes to NA. I'm like, I'm going to make him come back. And him and Brian and Big Mike and Johnny and a whole bunch of guys come into the sponsorship meeting and they support me. And for the next 90 days, my phone rings every day and it's this guy, Richie. I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? Why did you tell him? And he never asked me about sponsorship. He asked me how I was. What's going on? How's your wife? How the babies? How's your job? Every day for 90 days. And then they invited me to be the opening speaker at our area convention. And because I had been speaking to him every day, annoyed every time the phone rang, this guy again. I would get off the phone, be walking on air, rejuvenated, feeling loved again, feeling energetic about Narcotics Anonymous. And I said to him, oh, they invited me to be the opening speaker at the area convention. I'm so excited. I had spoken places, but when you get asked at home, it's different. You know, I've been all over the country, all over the world. I've been to foreign countries and spoke and sponsored people in foreign countries. But when they ask you at home, they know you, they know your idiosyncrasies, they know your arrogance, your indignance, your self-righteousness, your control issues, and they're like, will you carry the message for us? That's an honor for me. You guys listen to CDs, you're like, oh, he's a great speaker, bring him. Well, she's a great speaker. He shows up with like 19 guys. And he's like, hey, did you pray? I'm like, pray? Why would I pray? It's my story. You're gonna go tell my story. He said, nah, you should like pray before you share. I'm like, really? And 19 of us went up to my room and we prayed. Well, they prayed. And they all hugged me and they left, and he stayed in the room with me. I came out of the bathroom, I was wiping the tears from my eyes, and the spirit that dwells inside me said, you better ask. I never contemplated asking him to help me. I just didn't. He wasn't Andre. He looked like Andre, and talked like Andre, and walked like Andre. He shared like Andre. He wasn't Andre. I want Andre. And I asked him. And that was 26 years ago. And I'm going to tell you, I wrote the first step out of the step work of God. I went, I sat down with him. We went over it. And I called my boy Raymond. I said, Bob, what's up with him? He's like, what are you talking about? Raymond had asked him like, a day before or a day after me. We asked him like the same time. I'm like, what's up with him? He goes, what's the matter? I go, there's something wrong with him. Yelling at me about my answers on the first step and telling me that's not an acceptable answer. And Raymond's like, yeah, he's, you know, He got his stuff, Jimmy, like us. He's like, and I need you to do me a favor and you a favor. Stop looking for Andre. Andre was the angel God sent, and now he's dispatched somebody else. So you're either going to do one of two things. You're either going to bounce around or you're going to work with Richie. And then he said something. Richie doesn't even know this. Then he said something to me. He said, hey, he said, I'm going to be really honest with you. I think God sent you to Richie so you could help Richie. I needed to hear that. Not humbly, ego-wise.
Right.
Because I had 8 years, he had 15. Help him. He's the king of New York, but I'm taking the king down. And I pushed through. I pushed through the uncomfortability. I was very honest with him about how I was feeling, that I wasn't feeling connected and loved, and I wasn't feeling spiritually sound in our relationship. And I just kept telling him about it, just kept telling him about it, just kept telling him about it. And lo and behold, snap, all of a sudden, my walls went down. He didn't change. I changed. I stopped hearing him with my human ear, and I started to hear him with my spiritual ear. I started to hear what God needed me to hear from a different voice, from a different perspective. And today, I'll tell you, I'll say it on tape, I'm his favorite. And he's got guys that he's been sponsoring for 35, 37, 38 years. But here's what I'm going to tell you. He's battled, and you'll hear his story tomorrow night. He's battled illnesses for the last 10 years. Life-threatening illnesses. And I'm usually the first phone call. And my first question is, did you call Jack, his sponsor? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna. And I'd be like, you're gonna? Like, you should call your sponsor first. But no, we built this bond and this relationship that he trusts me. See, I'm talking about securing the love of the fellowship. You guys might not be hearing that, but I'm talking about being secure in the love of the fellowship. I came here insecure, insignificant. I don't feel that way anymore. I don't feel like I don't measure up. I don't feel like I don't have anything to offer. I know that Tim and Dee have almost 40 years clean or over 40 years clean. That doesn't mean I don't have anything to offer them. I'm talking about learning how to become my own person and allow my assets and gifts and that God's given me to be beneficial to the people around me. I'm learning now at 59 years old with 32 plus years clean. I'm learning that the attributes that I have, it's okay for me to have an ability to talk about those things and tell other people about those things. I'm writing on a fourth step about the good things in my life. When he told me, I was like, on the good things on my life, that's a, you know, it's a moral inventory. I'm taking stock. He goes, yeah, stock of the stuff that's good that you never want to look at. You never want to own it. You never want to claim it. You're easy to go in there and talk about all your insecurities, Jimmy. You talk about your defects. You talk about your shortcomings. You talk about acting like an idiot with your wife. You do all of that. You're great at that. What you don't have a good job at doing is you have an inability to talk about the goodness of your relationship with your daughters. You don't have the ability to talk about the goodness of your daughters being who they are as a direct result of you pouring into their lives day after day after day after day. You don't have the ability to talk about how you have broken down your father over the last 25 years. My father beat me violently every day in my childhood. I'm not talking about a backhand. I'm talking about through concrete walls, down concrete stairs, through me. I'm telling you, if what happened to me in my childhood happened to any kid today, my father would have been under the jail. And I got clean. I had major resentments. All I wanted was for him to tell me he loved me. That's all I wanted. Just tell me you love me. Just show up to one game. Just show up to one practice. Just give me one congratulations on 3 for 4. When I buy my house, tell me you're proud of me. Don't stand on my front porch and tell my friends how proud you are of me. And when I come in the house and ask you how did I do, you're like, well. And I learned from Richie that you don't hang up the phone without telling somebody you love them. It got so bad, I'd be talking to my boss on the phone. I'd have like a half hour conversation with my boss. He's like, all right, when you're done over there, I need you to run over to this job and do that. All right, Kenny, love you, bye. Boom. The one day he called me back, he goes, did you say you love me? I'm very quick with it. I said, listen, I do love you because you trust me with your projects, and when your projects make money, you give me another project, and even when your projects don't do as well as you think they should do, you still give me another project. So I do love you because you trust me, and I appreciate that you trust me. He was like, oh, okay. And he hung up. None of what I said to him was a lie. It was all true. But you don't tell your boss in the construction business that you love him. It's just not typically what you do. Not in union construction anyway, you know, because we're manly men. So I'm learning that I got to start talking more about some of the good stuff. Like, I met this kid 11 years ago. Man, I'm in this meeting. I'm in my home group. And this kid walks in. It's a big kid. He's like 6'2", 240. And every Monday night, I sit in the same seat. My back's on the wall. I haven't healed from that yet. I still got my back on the wall. Nobody's allowed to be behind me. Don't stand behind me. Don't walk behind me. It's just where I come from. And every Monday night, he'd walk into me like this. I know the kid's name. 18 months. Every Monday night, he's mean mugging me. And every Monday night, I'm not spiritually sound. And my brother's sitting next to me, and I'm like, I hope that come over here and knock his teeth out. And then one Monday night, my brother's in the bathroom. I'm playing on my phone. It's like 7:45. The home group starts at 8 o'clock. I had already said hello to everybody and welcomed the newcomers and just did what I do. I don't even talk about the stuff that I do in NA. I just don't. I just don't feel that it's necessary. And all of a sudden, boom, he pops next to me. And I'm like, oh, snap. Puff my chest out. I'm like, what's up? He's like, what's up? I go, what do you need? Oh, I can't sit next to the great Jimmy T. I'm like, bro, you've been mean mugging me for 18 months. Oh, my bad. I'll go sit with them. I go, bro, stop. What's up? He's like, nothing, man. You know. I'll go. I said, shut up and sit back. And shut up. Inside, I'm like, now I got sponsees in the meeting. They're not letting me get beat up, but they're on the other side of the room. I'm 48 years old at this point. This kid, you know, he could have me pummeled by the time they get across the room. And my brother sits next to him, and at the end of the meeting he says to my brother, I need a sponsor. And my brother starts to sponsor him. And my brother lived with me. My brother will have 17 years in June. My brother lived with me at the time. And he would be at my house when I get home from work. And my brother would be gone. I got two daughters. There's a very strict rule in my house. No boys in the house unless mom or dad home. Just the way I raised my daughters. What are you doing here? Oh, I was doing step work at Russell. Bro, it's 4:30. Russell left at 1. Oh, I was just, you know, hanging for 3 hours in my house. I know he's got 18 felony convictions. I'm upstairs. I'm like, he opened the box. Are the TVs downstairs? Is the good china in the closet? Every day he's at my house. And I get invited to Miami. 8 years ago, I get invited to Miami. I take my daughters down there, my wife. He's down there with his girlfriend. So by now, we have a little bit of a relationship. Now, he comes in. Now, he had never met my daughters because she was away at college or whatever she was doing, and the little one was whatever. And we're at the convention. We go out to eat, like 20 of us. She's sitting next to me, my oldest daughter. He's sitting directly in front of her. I look over. His tongue is on the table. Her tongue is on the table. I'm elbowing her, like, don't disrespect his girl. I'm kicking him under the table and telling him not to disrespect this girl. We eat. We go back to the hotel. His girlfriend goes upstairs. He's sitting on the couch next to my daughter. I'm like, first of all, fam, we ain't having this. You got a girl, and you ain't gonna disrespect her with my daughter. And my daughter better not dare disrespect her. I would never. 2 weeks later, come home. My daughter's home from school. He's at the house. I'm like, bro, I warned you. We're not dating. We're not talking. Well, it's just the two of yous. And there's a rule. And my daughter's like, Dad, I just walked in. Well, go touch the car. It's warm. I promise. I just got home. I didn't know he was here. So we're battling. But I'm battling. He's not battling.
Right.
I'm battling.
Yeah.
And he has an agenda, and it's not my daughter. He found his father dead at 11 years old from an overdose. He was 27, or 28 at the time. And he needed a father figure. But he didn't know how to ask. And I probably wouldn't have responded properly anyway. So he was just trying to be by me and be next to me and go places with me. Every place I spoke, he was right there in the front row. And don't dare make a comment while I'm speaking, because he's probably going to punch you. It's just who he is. Very protective. And then he grows closer. I finally let my guard down a little bit. I called the same guy, Raymond. And I'm like, Raymond, he wants to date my daughter. He got 18 felony convictions. He shot dopes. I don't want him dating my daughter. And Raymond said, he comes from good cloth. I said, yeah? Heroin cloth? He's like, Jimmy, who's he with all the time? I said, me. He goes, who's sponsoring him? I go, Russell. He goes, he comes from good cloth. She's picked some knuckleheads. He's good cloth. Put your guard down and trust God. I put my guard down. They start dating. He's treating her like this super princess. And of course, you know, I'm like, this is all a game. He's just trying to get in her pants. And he was a little bit of a man whore in the fellowship. And I had that conversation with him. I'm like, listen, you're going to date my daughter. She's made a commitment to save herself from marriage. I need you to respect that. More importantly, I need you to start respecting you. Know who you're sleeping with. Know who you're laying with. Have some value and worth in your own life. So here I am, begrudgingly allowing him in my life, and I'm pouring into his life. You see how God works? You see the power of the 12 steps? Even against my own will, God's goodness comes through. And then about 5-6 years ago, he says to me, you think I could marry your daughter? I'm like, in my head, I'm like, hell to the no. Can't marry my daughter. You got 18 felony convictions. I'm still in the past. He's got like 8 years clean, 7 years, whatever he's got clean. He's clean. He's been through the 12 steps. My brother's sponsoring him. And then he pulls out the ring. I'm like, bro, you're supposed to ask, get permission, then buy the ring. He's like, no, I knew you were going to be okay with it. Good thing you did, because I didn't really think I was going to be okay with it. And he asked me to pray over the ring and pray for him and pray for them. And I did that. And on August 14th of 2021, I got to walk my daughter down the aisle. And when we got to the end, you know how, you know, you hand your daughter to them and you shake their hand. And when I went to shake his hand, he pulled me in and he sobbed. And he said, Dad, thank you. Thank you for loving me when I was unlovable. And thank you for supporting me when I was unsupportable. And thank you for just guiding me when I was unguidable. And thank you for making me the man worthy to marry your daughter. I'm talking about the transformation power to 12 steps. Because I was in resistance the whole time. She gave me the 5-minute sign. I can't get away from the podium without telling you about, after my clean date, the most precious gift I've gotten. I came home from a commitment. I was speaking somewhere, and I get home, and I had like a long flight. It was like 14 hours and delays, and I get home, and my daughter's like, sit down. She's married. They're in their own. Sit down. I'm like, sit down. I want to go to bed. She's like, I need you to sit down. Close your eyes. And I sit down, and I close my eyes, and she puts a shirt across my chest and hands me a little box. She's like, open your eyes. I open my eyes and I open the box and it's a little duck. And my shirt says, Papa. And the baby's due date was May 1st. Wow. My clean date. And she said, no, Dad, we can't. We can't. I said, baby, listen. Listen to me. Listen. If that baby's born on May 1st, we'll change my clean date to May 5th. She said, Dad, all these years, everybody knows your clean date. I'm like, don't worry about it. I'll tell them I was lying. It's all good. She said, but Dad, I said, no, but Ashley, my clean date's already fulfilled its purpose.
Yeah. That's right.
Your mom stayed. She slept with me. You were born. She slept with me again. 6 years later, Haley was born. Nikki became a really good man and married you. So her birthday is May 1st. My clean date really doesn't matter that much, because we're going to honor and celebrate her every day. She was born on May 4th, so on May 4th she'll be 2 years old. Aww. And, you know, people told me, oh, wait till you have a grandchild, oh my God. I was like, whatever, I'm never going to love her more than my daughters. And I don't love her more than my daughters. And I'm very intentional to show my daughters that I still love and appreciate them and that I haven't forgotten them because of the baby. But that little girl has changed me. I call her on FaceTime and she's like, ah! And then she don't want to talk to me no more. My wife gets all butthurt and heartbroken, and I'm like, babe. She said, Papa! What else is there? But I'm watching both my daughters grow up again in her. Attitudes, behaviors, mannerisms, looks. And we've been in Florida. I retired 2 years ago after 40 years in the trade. And we've been in Florida since January. Well, kind of in Florida. We've been to Thailand, and we've been to Seattle. We retired, so we're trying to live life. And I can't wait till next Friday when I go back to Jersey. And when she sees me, she was asleep, and she heard my voice the last time we went home a couple weeks ago. And she opened one eye, and she went, Papa! I was like, that's right, that's my girl. But I just came here to stop getting high. I didn't come here to save my marriage. I didn't come here to have kids. I didn't come here to go to Thailand. I didn't come here to go to South Africa. I didn't come here to go all the places that I've been blessed to go. I came here to stop getting high. And the basic text says that when the addict stops using and works the program, lost dreams awaken. How about this? I'm in the new possibilities arise. Lost dreams have awakened. All of the things that I wanted, lost dreams have awakened. New possibilities arise. That man I resented when I got here, Richie will tell you, he was down my house a couple months ago. Me and that guy are like this. When he had open heart surgery, my brother's his biological son, I'm his son, I'm his stepson, I'm not biological. When he had his open heart surgery and we went to Arizona, where they were living at the time, he wanted me to take him. Not my mom, not his son, me. And when I went in the room with him before they took him in the back, he said, "Would you pray with me?" And I said, "Of course I'll pray with you, Dad." I'm talking about the change in me is transforming the people around me as a result of me living the program in Narcotics Anonymous. My dad and I are best friends. Tells me every time he talks to me, "I want to be like you when I grow up. If I could be half the man you are, I'll be half a man." So I'm talking about the power of Narcotics Anonymous. So if you're new in here, buckle up. Work the steps. Don't use no matter what. Get a sponsor. Get a home group. Get a service commitment. Stop making excuses for getting high. There's no reason to get high. Both my daughters were given last rites. Both my sisters died. I buried my mother-in-law. I buried my father-in-law. My mother's been through major surgeries. My dad's been through major surgeries. My sponsor's been through major surgeries. There's no reason to use. You gotta stop. And I know I sound like I'm preachy, and I probably am, and I really don't care anymore. We gotta stop. It's not okay to get high. People are dying. We've become okay anonymous. You made it back. It's okay. No! It's not okay that you used. We're thankful you made it home. You're showing a courage not your own. However, it's not okay to use. I'd rather be your ring bearer than your pallbearer. We got to start like loving people. And sometimes loving people means we got to tell them the truth. Of a young man at home, he's not a young man, he's 52. He can't stay clean. He's 7 years younger than me, I call him a young man. He can't stay clean. He doesn't, he refuses to stay clean. And I'm brutal with him. And I'm the guy he talks to all the time. I don't sponsor him, one of my guys sponsor him. I tell him all the time, stop with the BS. He posted a picture of him and his 16-year-old daughter the other day on Facebook. I said, "Bro, this in and of itself should be enough to help you push through. How about we need you? How about we love you? How about we appreciate you? Hold on. Hold on. We need you. We need you desperately because we can only keep what we have by giving it away." So I'm sure people heard my CD and have heard me before and they're like, "Oh, he's going to be all full of I'm 59. I was thinking about this morning before I got on the plane. I've been doing this for 30 years. All over the country. And sometimes I am. Tonight I'm just at peace. I'm just at peace. My daughter was texting me, my youngest one. She's in Florida. She flew in last night. We picked her up. I'm going home. I'll get home Sunday at midnight or whatever. And then I'll spend the 5 days with her. Then we'll go back to Jersey. She got off the plane and spotted me. And started to cry. And she said, "Dad, I miss you." I said, "Baby, I miss you too." I'm talking about a life worth living. If nobody told you they love you today, you might be hanging out with the wrong people. Page 254 in the Living Clean book says that NA is all about love. It's the most powerful spiritual principle we have. Look around the room. Every ethnicity, I believe, is in here. I'm sure every sexual identity is in you. I'm sure there's Christians, Muslims, atheists, Buddhists. Where else? Where else can you go but Narcotics Anonymous and allowed to be yourself and be loved for being yourself? The greatest thing is when you can become yourself. I am no longer pandering to the popular people in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't really care anymore. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. You like me, that's cool. You hug me after the meeting, that's cool. You don't like me after the meeting and you're out in the hallway and you want to tell me off after the meeting, that's cool. Because I don't live and die by your opinions anymore. I value you, but your opinion doesn't make me who I am. I have a relationship with a God that I believe in, and what He says about me is who I am. And I'm grateful for that relationship, and I'm unapologetic for that relationship that I have with Him. So I just want to encourage you guys to just keep coming. Keep serving. You don't like what the convention does? Get on the committee.
Come on. That's right.
Listen, don't go back to the region or your home group or the area and go, I love when people complain about the program and then but then they don't want to join the program. Who's speaking this year? So-and-so. Well, I don't know why they're speaking this year. All right, we meet the first and third Thursday of every month. I can't do Thursdays. Change it to Wednesdays. One monkey don't run no show. Service is sacrificial. And unthanked. Unthanked. I used to get offended when people wouldn't hug me after I spoke. Now I'm like, then you came for the wrong reason. Then you came for you. You didn't come for whoever it is that God sent you for. So I love you guys from the bottom of my heart. If anything I said was beneficial, we opened a meeting with the Serenity Prayer. That means your higher power, my higher power got together, had a little conversation, got the right words out of my mouth when I got out of the way, and the message was carried. Love you guys. Thank you.